And now, the world's most exciting podcast, The Savage Nation, home of borders, language, culture. Here he is, Michael Savage.
Republicans may not like it, but I'm going to make sure the wealthy pay their fair share.
Good morning, Doctor. How are you? Nice to see you.
Great. Nice to see you.
So where am I speaking with you? Where are you in Germany?
I'm in Berlin, in the capital. And you?
Oh, I'm in outside of San Francisco. It's interesting that we're going to talk today about your topic because I purchased this book a while ago, which I have not yet read.
Ah, okay.
Because I'm fascinated by the history of Germany. And I was joking with myself. I said, how did a great nation like Germany go from an Iron Cross to a Red Cross in one generation? And of course, I play jokes with myself to keep myself from going completely mad. So
if you're interested in this, I produced a film. It was, I got an award at Freedom Fest 2 years ago in Las Vegas. It's Life Behind the Berlin Wall. And it's a comparison between East and West Germany. It's they show it at schools in the United States today. I did it with the Free to Choose Network, who worked together with Milton Friedman. And we have this, it's only 17 minutes to compare East and West Germany. And I have another thing. Maybe I can send it to you if you like. Wait a second.
No problem. I love it. It's like what I do during interviews. I do the same thing during interviews. I get up and go to another room to get stuff. I love it. Here,
I can send you this book if you like.
But what is it about that I don't know?
It's the first research about how Adolf Hitler thought, especially in the economies and social policies, that he was much more anti-capitalist than much people think. And it was my first doctoral dissertation, and I was the first one to read all his speeches, all his essays, his books, and a lot of other sources to reconstruct his economic thinking.
Savage. Michael Savage, a host like no other.
The first taste of rare bourbon you finally got your hands on. That's nice. At Caskers.com, we make this experience easy. Caskers is a one-stop spirit curator with an impressive selection of exclusive, sought-after, rare, and household names in the realm of premium spirits and champagne. Discover the top flavors of the year now by going to Caskers.com and using code WELCOME10 for $10 off your first purchase. Get $10 off your first purchase with code WELCOME10 at Caskers.com.
Middle East on the brink, North Korea on the brink, Iran increasing its aggression, elections in Taiwan. Look, there's a lot of global instability as we ourselves plunge into primary season. How have you sheltered your savings and investments from potential major setbacks to the economy? You think it can happen here? It can happen here, but it's not too late to diversify an old IRA or 401k into gold. And Birch Gold Group can help you with that. Birch Gold is the only gold company I trust. As opposed to many other investments, gold thrives in times of uncertainty. It is an important part of diversifying your savings. Now listen, here's how Birch Gold can help make it a part of yours. Birch Gold will help you convert an existing IRA or 401k into a tax-sheltered IRA in gold. And it doesn't cost you a penny out of pocket. You want to learn more? Just text SAVAGE to 989898 for a free info kit. SAVAGE, text it to 989898 and you get a free info kit. It costs you nothing. Just text SAVAGE to 989898. With an A-plus rating with the Better Business Bureau, countless five-star reviews, and thousands of happy customers, I encourage you to arm yourself with the knowledge of diversification through precious metals. Protect yourself. Text SAVAGE to 989898 and claim your free info kit. Protect your savings with gold. Do it now. Text SAVAGE to 989898. Thank you very much. Birch Gold is the only gold company I trust. Text SAVAGE to 989898.
What happened and existed in the Soviet Union was not socialism. It was authoritarian communism. And communism, whether in Cuba, whether in the Soviet Union, whether in other countries, was marked by totalitarianism, was marked by throwing millions of people into the gulag. Stalinism was about as bad as it got. But right near, you're from Russia. I don't know if you've ever visited Finland. Is Finland, Finland is a neighbor to Russia. They have a very democratic society with strong democratic socialist principles.
Interesting. Wait, this is fascinating to me for a thousand reasons that people are afraid to touch on this topic for fear of being called, you know, sympathizing or sympathetic to Hitler. But when I was a little boy, my father owned an antique store and he used to get lots of used stuff, including books. And I would be down in the basement cleaning things. I remember finding a copy of Mein Kampf in English. I don't know how old I was, 10. I can't say I truly understood it, but I did read it. And I became fascinated by the fact that it wasn't just screaming, raving anti-Semitism. A lot of it was about economics, wasn't it?
Yes, and this is even more true for his speeches from the 30s, because in the early years, for example, when he wrote Mein Kampf, he was it was full of this anti-Semitic and anti-Jewish rhetoric. But later on, he saw that he couldn't convince only a small fraction of the German population with his stuff. And he focused then on the economy, especially things similar to social democrats or even to communists. And this was the main reason for his success. Of course, he was all over his life, he hated Jewish people, but he was more silent about this stuff in really in the years of his success. And he focused on other topics. And if he spoke in this internal circle, I analyzed his so-called monologues in the Führer headquarters. And he was, for example, he admired Stalin and he admired the planned economy in the Soviet Union. And he said, we should do something similar after we won the war. So it's a lot of surprising. I can send you, maybe we have another interview about this. If you forward your postal address and please add a telephone number, because I sent it from Germany and they require the telephone number from UPS. And then I'm happy to send you this book.
We're speaking with Dr. Rainer Zeidelman. Is that correct?
Yes.
Dr. Rainer Zeidelman. And his latest book is called How Nations Escape Poverty, Vietnam, Poland, and the Origins of Prosperity. It's a book that's important because we're living through in America a change, an economic change, and most people feel it, but they don't know what's going on. You, of course, do know what's going on. I mean, you return to Adam Smith's 1776 treatise, The Wealth of Nations, in your latest book, How Nations Escape Poverty. But you use Vietnam, Poland, and the Origins of Prosperity. You use those examples to tell us where we are today. Are we heading on in the West? Are we heading into poverty or out of poverty?
Unfortunately, it will not happen from one day to the next that we go to poverty, but sooner or later, of course, a planned economy worked nowhere in the world and failed all the times in the last 100 years. And what we are doing now in Europe and in the United States is to go more and more in this direction of a planned economy. I call it the modern socialism. It's not this old-fashioned socialism where you nationalize everything formal, legally. You are the owner of your means of production or your property. But in fact, the government tells you what you're allowed to do, what you have to do, what you should not do. I'll give you one example. We are very proud in Germany for our automotive industry with Mercedes and BMW and Volkswagen, but they destroy it right now because in Brussels they forbid the production of combustion engines. And they tell now the companies what kind of cars they have to produce. And this is the real difference between socialism on the one hand and capitalism on the other hand. In a free market economy, entrepreneurs decide what to produce. In the end, it's consumers' choice. We decide everything every day. If you use Google, you make Sergey Brin and Larry Page rich. Or if you order something Amazon, you make Jeff Bezos rich. It's our decision as consumers. And in the planned economy, government officials and politicians, they think they are smarter than millions of consumers, millions of entrepreneurs, and that they should decide what is produced. And even if they don't call it a planned economy, even if they don't call it socialism, it is a new way of socialism. And we are going in this direction in Europe and in States.
Fascinating. Yeah, that's 100% true. In other words, they may not own the auto industry, but they're telling the auto industry, you cannot produce a gas-driven engine, produce a battery-driven engine.
Yes.
For example. Yeah. So it's not the consumer says, I want a powerful diesel engine, or I want a powerful gas-driven engine, or whatever I want. I want a I once owned a Mercedes S600. So I'm a tremendous fan of Mercedes, and I love mechanical devices. I love big engines. I've owned boats, and I like big diesel engines. I just like the way they work. They're phenomenal. They're phenomenal masterpieces of industrial genius. And
isn't it ridiculous? I think the first time in history that the country voluntarily forbids and destroys his most successful product in the world. I think it's something socialists can do.
Especially when we know that the fraud of climate change unto itself is a topic worthy of actual discussion. Now, I kept citing, when I don't want to distract us from your topic, but, you know, there are so many good arguments, scientific arguments, that show that climate change, as professed today by these czars that are controlling our industries, is a complete falsehood. And I keep referring to ice cores. There's a certain ice core sample, great study I published in a book years ago. And they drilled down 8,000 feet into the Arctic, and they pulled up ice cores, and they found that, of course, we know that in millennia past, temperatures were much higher than they are today, long before the internal combustion engine and coal-fired plants were created. There are cycles in nature. So this madness is a form of mass hysteria in a way. And the mass hysteria is now caught on, so it's controlling industry. So in your book, How Nations Escape Poverty, you use examples of Vietnam, Poland, et cetera. Tell us about Poland, because Poland just took a turn, I think, back towards the past, didn't it, with this new jerk they put in power?
Let's go back in the history a little bit. You know, Poland lost more people in the Second World War as a percentage of the population than every other country in the world. And after the Second World War, they established a planned economy, and it became one of the poorest countries in Europe. Very, very poor. I have stories in my book about Polish people. Even in the end of the 80s, they had to stand in long, long lines, queues, waiting hours and hours, sometimes even days, to get their products. And even after you waited maybe 5-6 hours or even 2 days, it's not a guarantee that you could get something. Then you buy anything, maybe to exchange it with something else that someone will need. So this was the situation in the end of the 80s. The Poland was poorer than the Ukraine, poorer than the Czech Republic, and a worker earned only less than 30% of this what someone in West Germany had, for example. So a real poor country. And then they started in the 1990 with capitalist free market reforms, introduced private property free market reforms. The name of the reformer was Leszek Balcerowicz. For me, he's similar to Maggie Thatcher or Ronald Reagan. He had the same spirit. Or today, Javier Milei. They all believe in the same stuff, in free market economy, in economists like Hayek or Mises. And he started with his economic reforms. And now, since 3 decades, Poland is Europe's growth champion and one of the fastest growing countries even in the world. And standard of living increased dramatically. And this is one example that in the moment, if you introduce private property, competition, capitalism, it works. Of course, only one example, but a very interesting example, because most of people don't understand why did it happen.
Savage. The Savage Nation. It's Savage on Demand.
Hi, everybody. I'm Katie Segal.
And I'm Kurt Sutter.
And welcome to our new podcast called Pi, people, influences, and experiences.
Yes, it's sort of the get to know you at a deeper level, the who, what, when, where, and why you are, rather than what it is you do.
Absolutely. We're not going to talk too much about what people do. We just want to know about their families, where they come from, you know, what shapes their parenting if they have kids, what shapes their marriages if they're married. We just want to be really nosy. We want to get in there.
A deep dive into nature and nurture.
And we started it because there are a lot of people that we don't know that we are curious about.
Right. And I have no friends. So for me, it's, you know.
Trying to get them out of the house.
Listen to it on whatever you listen to podcasts on.
Yeah, podcast, homecast.
Your podcasting apparatus. Watch it on the YouTube.
He's aging himself.
Have you ever experienced turbulence on a flight and wondered why?
And you can see all the terrain around you. You've got no issue with visibility or anything?
No, everything's peachy.
Maybe you've sat on the tarmac for hours wondering why your plane isn't moving.
Well, we're outside here. They're saying the ramp is closed. They won't let us park because of Air Force One.
Listen in on the conversations between pilots and air traffic controllers on the Air Traffic Out of Control podcast.
510, is he declaring an emergency? There's smoke in the cabin. I need to make a landing right now on 31 left.
We have the most interesting, wild, and funny ATC recordings you will ever hear. Check out Air Traffic Out of Control wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
I have to ask you, you're going on tour to promote this book, It's Okay to Be Angry About Capitalism. And you're here talking about it. I understand we're not the bad guys you're describing in the book when it comes to media, but tickets for your tour apparently are selling for $95 on Ticketmaster, which is accused of anti-competitive behavior. You know that. Some of your Democrats are criticizing them. Aren't you benefiting yourself
from this system that you're trying
to dismantle?
First of all, those decisions are made totally by the publisher and the bookseller. I think there's one case where in one place here in Washington, politics and prose and independent books are charging some tickets. Most of them, I think, are $40, $50, and you get a book as well. So if you want to come, you're going to have to pay $40. I'll throw in the book for free. And we're doing a number of free events, but I don't make a nickel out of these things at all.
But you're okay doing business with Ticketmaster?
No, not particularly. But that's, again, I have nothing to do with that. That is, if you wrote a book, it'd probably be the same process.
Mm-hmm. So you have to operate within the system.
I do. I write a book, a major publisher, et cetera, et cetera.
But I have a question. I know about the Polish miracle of that you describe and how the country literally came back from the ashes as a result of embracing free market capitalism or free market, so to speak. But didn't they just elect a rather left of center president?
In Poland, it's complicated. You know, the Peace Party, the so-called Peace Party that governed for 8 years, they call it conservative and right-wing. And this is a right-wing party if it comes to topics like, for example, abortion or nation or migration especially. But in the economy, it's a very left-leaning party. It's a very socialist party, the Peace Party. For example, they stopped nationalization. They stopped privatization. They even nationalized some banks. So it's a strange mixture between nationalism and right wing on the one hand, but left wing socialism on the other hand. And the new party now, that is the coalition that they elected, it's in some aspects, it's not my favorite, but in some aspects, I hope maybe there will be even a little bit more pro-free market than the Peace Party. We saw it in polls. I did a poll in Poland and in other countries about the image of capitalism. And the interesting thing was we did it in 35 countries. It was the biggest poll done ever about the image of capitalism. And the most pro-free market statements all over the world was Poland, number one. But then if you distinguish between more moderate left and right-wing Polish respondents, I saw that even the moderate left are more pro-free market than the right. And I thought my numbers are... I called the Polling Institute and told them, here, all the numbers are correct, but here is a mistake, and they double checked it, maybe with a coding or whether they made with a translation of the questionnaire. But it was not a mistake. And then when I was in Poland and I spoke with libertarian people, they're like, yes, of course, we know it. These are the so-called right-wing people. They are more anti-capitalism than the moderate left. So it's
Wait, I've got to jump in on that point. Right-wing people are more anti-capitalist than the left.
Yes, they are not anti-capitalist, but a little bit more. They are all more pro-free market in Poland. But according to our poll, the biggest support for capitalism was with the moderate left.
Isn't that something? So why would the right wing be opposed to free markets? Where does that thinking come from? I thought they were into free markets.
Yes, they told people in Poland all our problems come from they sold it out to the United States and to Germany. It's a kind of nationalism. And they said privatization was only to sell it to the Americans and to sell it to the Germans and all this stuff. So they combined a little bit this nationalism and anti-capitalism. We have it, by the way, in a lot of countries in Europe that there are parties, they are called right-wing, but in social politics or the economy, they are left-leaning socialists. For example, this Le Pen party in France.
Yes.
It is about migration. So, of course, it's a right-wing party, but their economic program, the social program, is very left-leaning. And we have it in a lot of countries in Europe.
I want to jump in on that. You're saying Le Pen is somewhat socialist economically?
Yes.
Ah, I didn't know that. See, these are the subtleties that we can only get from a professor such as yourself, Dr. Rainer Zeidelman, and his books include In Defense of Capitalism, Hitler's National Socialism. You've published 27 books, and your new book is How Nations Escape Poverty, which we're talking about. Now, here in America, I've called Bernie Sanders, who I despise, the most dangerous man in America.
Absolutely.
Because of his espousal of a fake thing called democratic socialism. I'm going to ask you about it in a moment, but I'm not an economist, but I read enough to know that prior to the 1917 violent revolution in Russia, Trotsky was the head of the Democrat Socialist Party in Russia. That's what he called himself. And it was only after the violent Bolshevik revolution that Trotsky was able to then enact pure communism and fully embrace what he really was. And I see Bernie Sanders as a Trotskyite. Would you say that's accurate?
I read the last book by Bernie Sanders. The title is It's Okay to Be Angry About Capitalism. I read this book. And I tell you one example of what is really crazy in this book. It's all crazy, but one is special. He has one chapter with a headline, "There should be zero billionaires in the United States." It's his headline. There should be zero billionaires. And then if you look at the Forbes list of, you know, you have a list of all the billionaires in the world, and then search for countries with zero billionaires. You find Cuba, you find North Korea, and you find some very poor African countries. So these are the countries with zero billionaires. And he spoke about kind of what he called democratic socialism like Sweden. This shows only that he understands nothing about Sweden. I have another book with the title The Power of Capitalism, and I have a chapter about Sweden. So I know a lot about Sweden, and I've been there several times. Sweden was an experiment with democratic socialism in the 70s and 80s, and it failed completely. Entrepreneurs left the country. In the end, they had taxes up to 102%.
Oh, my 102%. God.
So it was really success. Maybe you know this company.
I don't know this. No, I didn't.
IKEA is this furniture, you know, company. The founder of this company, his name is Kamprad. He left Sweden and then he lived in Switzerland as one of the richest men in Europe. So, but they learned their lesson, and then today they are even more capitalist than the United States. You see it in the ranking of the Heritage Foundation. They have this index of economic freedom, a ranking of all countries in the world, how economically free they are. The United States is ranked 25, Sweden is ranked 10. So Sweden today It's a more capitalist country. And now the important thing about Sanders, if you compare the number of billionaires living in Sweden and in the United States, you have 60% more billionaires in Sweden, of course, adjusted to the population. They have only 10 million people there in the United States, 340 million. But it's 60% more. And so if Bernie Sanders, he doesn't know where he's talking about. I don't know whether he even was in Sweden in his life or whether he read any books about it. But if he says, I want to have zero billionaires, then he can move to Cuba. He can move to North Korea.
Yeah, there but Biden is mimicking his theories. People forget that this rat, Bernie Sanders, who I consider not only wrong but evil in terms of his demagoguery. First of all, he owns three homes at least that we know of. He's an absolute classic communist through and through. But I don't have to sit here and debase him. He's a horrible man, but he's so powerful. He sits on the Senate Finance Committee. He is actually dictating a lot of Biden's economic policies and speeches. So when Biden gave a speech saying the billionaires need to pay more taxes, it was Bernie Sanders talking through his mouth. That's the way I see this. And of course, then you have the quote squad in America, like the absolute know-nothings, who I call occasional cortex because our brain functions occasionally, who you said during a Senate hearing, a congressional hearing, that RICO is not a crime. And she got egg all over her face for that. She didn't even know that RICO is a crime.
Savage. The Savage Nation. It's savage, uncut, unfiltered, and raw.
Lauren, we are sisters.
That's true.
And we host a celebrity-obsessed podcast called Pop Apologists.
We also love Taylor Swift. Chandler, how are you managing to cope while we await Taylor's new album?
Look, I want to be put into a medically induced coma and wake up on April 19th, but I'm not sure my insurance is going to cover it.
Join us on our pop culture podcast, Pop Apologists, where we will be dishing on all things celebrity news and deep diving every word and note of Taylor's new album.
Pop Apologists.
Pop Apologists.
And so no one ever makes $1 billion. You take $1 billion.
But speaking more generally, rather than Bernie Sanders, who gets me so agitated I may have to reach for a blood pressure pill. I have to ask you this. Why have socialist ideologies become popular within the past decade? Why are they increasing in popularity? And do you agree with me that there is a movement towards worldwide socialism right now?
Absolutely. First, I agree. And I, before we come to the reasons, I will support your statement. I've been in the last 20 months in 30 countries all over the world. And I had lectures about my books because they are published in 30 countries. And I promised to go there. And if you look around the world, in Latin America, it's almost all socialist now. In Brazil, even in Chile, what was the most successful capitalist country in Latin America, they voted for a socialist. In Peru and in Colombia, only Argentina now is the only hope. Hopefully, they will go in the good direction with Chavez. But the rest is all socialist, Latin America. If we speak about Asia, they made huge progress in China in the 80s, 90s, because less government, more free market, private property. This was Deng Xiaoping's reforms. But now with this Xi Jinping, they go back again to more government and less market. So they will have problems. In the United States, we don't have to talk about this. And in Europe, we go more and more in this direction of a planned economy. I mentioned this Index of Economic Freedom from the Heritage Foundation. And it's the worst index since 23 years. And the United States have the worst ranking since they started the index in 1995. So all over the world, you are absolutely correct. It's proven by facts, by my own impressions from my world tour, and also by the statistics that we go more and more in this direction. So why is that?
Why is that? Why is, so for the listeners who are following us, the question is why are nations moving towards socialism?
Yes, and I think one reason is because countries forget why they become successful after a time. This is what what in the United States happened, or why are the United States the most, most successful country in the world? Two reasons. First, it's capitalism. Second is what I call the American spirit. You're the master of your own life. Make your decisions. Today, they replaced capitalism with this new modern form of socialism. And this American spirit, they replaced with victimhood mentality, this woke ideology. You're not the master of your own life. You're a victim. You have no chance to change anything as long as you come with us and fight for another society. In Germany, it's the same. We go also more and more in this wrong direction. What made us successful after the Second World War? Ludwig Erhard's free market economy. And nations forget it after a time. In Chile, this is the craziest example, because I've been in many countries in Latin America, and they are so poor. But if you come to Chile with a modern airport and everything, you feel more like being in Europe. And they were very successful, but they forget it after a time. And then the next problem is, I think it's not especially the fault of socialist ideologies. It's the fault of entrepreneurs and conservatives who don't fight for capitalism. They are focused, what I understand, in a way, on their business, while the intellectuals all over the day, paid by taxpayers' money, of course, sitting in the universities, yes, and creating all their stupid theories of woke or new socialism or whatever. And, people forget it, and then they have a trick, the socialists. If you tell them something about that socialism failed all the time in the last 100 years, there's not a single example. And they tried it in so many different ways, in East Germany, another way than the Soviet Union.
But they always blame capitalism. They always say the reason socialism fails is because of capitalists.
And they add something. They said it wasn't real socialism. After it failed, the last example was Venezuela. Venezuela was, in the 70s, one of the 20 richest countries in the world. Then they started with more big government, labor market regulation, and the situation became worse. And then at the end of the 90s, they voted for Hugo Chavez, for the socialists. And now today, 7.5 million people fled from Venezuela. This is 25% of the population. They had an inflation rate a couple of years ago, 1,000,000%. And people are living in poverty there. And the same people who told, there were a lot of intellectuals at American and European universities who told us 25 years ago, oh, this is the socialism of the 21st century, Hugo Chavez. And if you ask them now, what is with this? Oh, no, sorry, it was real socialism. And this is what they did all the time after socialism failed in the Soviet Union, after it failed in China. So, and now I have a positive example in my book, How Nations Escape Poverty. And, we mentioned Poland, but there's another example I want to talk about. This is Vietnam, because this is very interesting. Mm. Vietnam, they call themselves a socialist country with a leading communist party. But I can guarantee you one thing. It's much easier to find a Marxist at an American university than in Vietnam. I've been there. I had lectures in four different universities in Vietnam, and I had lectures in a lot of universities in the United States. It's very hard to find a Marxist in a university in Vietnam, because they are vaccinated against socialism, because they realized that it did not work. They call themselves this way. And of course, as far as it's about politics, they have this one party system. But in the economy, they started in, you have to know this, in the 80s and even in the beginning of the 90s, Vietnam was the poorest country in the world. Poorer than all African countries. I have here the number. With a per capita GDP of $98, Vietnam was the poorest country in the world in 1990, behind Somalia with 130 and Sierra Leone with 160. Wow. No, this was the poorest country. Very poor. I have it in my book, Stories You Had to Wait, as in Poland, days and days to get only a little bit of rice. And there was real, it was a time of hunger and real poverty. Why? Okay, first they had the war, but after the communists won the war, they established this crazy plan, the Kani, what was only in North Vietnam before, all over Vietnam, also in the south. And of course, it didn't work. But now the really important point. People in Vietnam are very smart, even the people who call themselves communists. In the end of the 80s, they realized it doesn't work, the planned economy. And they started with their free market reforms, private property, more competition. They opened to the world. They have more free trade agreements than any other country in Asia today. And the most important thing, I spoke with people there and I had polls there, the spirit is very pro-capitalist there. For example, we asked them in a poll, what do you associate when you hear the word capitalism? We asked in Vietnam. Here are the answers. 81% progress, 80% innovation, 77% wide range of good, 74% prosperity. This is what, when people in Vietnam hear about capitalism and they admire wealthy people. I was invited to a workshop in the Foreign Trade University in Vietnam. The topic was, how can we improve the image of wealthy people? So I was never invited to a similar workshop in the United States or Europe. Even we saw it in our poll that there's no other country where rich people have such a positive image. In Western countries, they are scapegoats today for all negative developments.
Savage. Home of borders, language, culture. The Savage Nation.
A savage republic inside the plot to destroy America lays out the threats we face, prepare you for what's next, and offer solutions to save our republic. Please wake up and fight back before it is too late. You can buy it right now on Amazon or on BarnesandNoble.com. A Savage Republic Inside the Plot to Destroy America by Michael Savage. Thank you for listening. Share it with 5 others. Well, that brings me to something I wanted to ask you, which fits right in here. There's an article showing Mark Zuckerberg's new $300 million, 287-foot super yacht. Good for him. And I asked on Twitter, why does Zuck support Biden? Why would any mega billionaire like Mark Zuckerberg support a guy like Biden, who is moving the nation more and more to a planned economy and to higher taxes and to socialism? Can you answer that question? Does it make sense to you?
For me, it's also hard to understand that we know it's not only Mark Zuckerberg. It's Warren Buffett, who I admire in a way as an investor, also George Soros, and you have a lot of others. I don't know whether it's a kind of masochism or whatever, because they call for higher taxes, but they don't want to pay this taxes, this higher taxes. Maybe it's a psychological reason. They don't really know what are the sources of wealth. They became rich, but they don't understand anything about the free market economy. Maybe they hope if they support Biden, if he win the elections, that he will not do things against Meta or against Facebook. It's like a peace policy.
Yes.
So I don't know what is in their mind, but
I get it. So in other words, if they support Biden, who's liable to win, let's put the Trump aside for the moment. Maybe Biden wouldn't break them up or go after them as an antitrust basis. They're basically buying protection. But yes. It makes no sense to me. I walk around in my
neighborhood. No, it's crazy. I have
neighbors here in a white suburban community in one of the places I live, and they're almost all left-wing. A few think the way I do. And I say to them, why would any property owner be a vote for a Democrat in California? Why you're voting for your own demise? I don't understand. Your higher taxes, fewer police. What thinking is there here? There is no thinking.
Yeah. Yes. And I think this is the main problem. It's absolutely the main. The problem is not this left wing ideologist. They are not our problem. The problem is this kind of entrepreneurs. Instead of fighting for capitalism, instead of fighting for free market economy, they do these crazy things, and they support. There are a lot of examples I read a book some weeks ago. It's the dictatorship of woke capital. You have a lot of examples there in the United States, even an advertisement where they do crazy woke. Maybe you remember with this beer Budweiser, where they did this woke, and they harm themselves. They harm themselves. They are crazy. It's not rational. And of course, I know there are a lot of wealthy.
Somebody created this phrase many years ago.
Yes, because liberalism, I know you use it another way than in we do it in Europe. Liberalism for us means pro free market economy. United States, it means left wing ideology. They stole even the.
I say liberalism is a mental disorder, I don't mean that liberals are mentally disordered, but the religion of liberalism, which becomes a religion, doesn't it, is actually a mental disorder. We're speaking with Dr. Rainier Zeitelman, and his latest book is How Nations Escape Poverty. It's been pretty good, but I can't overwhelm people with too much information, and I have to ask you, any concluding remarks from you in defense of capitalism, debunking the myths? Any final thoughts?
I think sometimes, I have a lot of interviews all over the world. Sometimes I have not so much time as with you. Thank you for this. I have only maybe 30 seconds. And if someone asks me why I have this T-shirt, I love capitalism. Why do we have this crazy T-shirt? And then my answer is 200 years ago, before capitalism, 90% of the worldwide population lived in extreme poverty. 90%. Today it's less than 9%. I think this is enough. And, this is a great success story. And you don't have to go back so long in history. This is, I don't discuss about theory. In my books, you find zero theory. You find, I'm a historian. You find examples from history. Like we talked today, Poland, Vietnam, for example, in my other book, In Defense of Capitalism, or The Power of Capitalism, you have so many examples. And maybe I can recommend in the end of the interview, I mentioned one film at the beginning of it's this film, Life Behind the Berlin Wall. You find it for free on YouTube. And there's another film, it's Poland, From Socialism to Prosperity. They are both free on YouTube. And there you have, I think you should show it to especially young people, and you should give these books to young people who are in the university or students, because teachers don't tell them anything about this. This is a big, big problem. They know nothing. Let me, at the end, maybe tell you this shocking thing. For me, it's shocking. The biggest socialist experiment in history was in the end of the 50s in China. Mao Zedong called it the Great Leap Forward. 45 million people died. 45 million people only in 4 years as a result of this experiment. And when I have my lectures, I mentioned this. I had this lecture in 30 countries in the last 20 months. Wherever I speak, I ask people one question. Have you heard at school or university about this biggest socialist experiment where 45 million people died? And whether I speak in Latin America, in Asia, in the United States, or in Europe, only very few people raise their hand. They haven't heard anything about it. And it is crazy for me. It is as shocking as if someone would say to me, I never heard that Adolf Hitler killed 6 million Jews. Fortunately, everyone had heard about it. But why not about the crimes of socialism? This is the problem. This is the reason why I'm writing my books.
Well, this has been quite a ride with you right now, an intellectual roller coaster. And I hope people listen to every word that you had to say. And of course, where can they buy your new book, How Nations Escape Poverty? Where is that available? On Amazon?
Yeah, sure. You get it on Amazon. You get it on Barnes & Noble. It will be delivered next Tuesday. So if you order now, you can get it on Amazon or on Barnes & Noble. And you get all my other books, like The Power of Capitalism, there's a new edition, or In Defense of Capitalism. These books are very proud, recommended by Steve Forbes. And I have a preface from George Gilder and from Arthur Laffer from my books. I'm very proud about it. So hopefully you get these books. But a warning, don't give it to anti-capitalists. They will not read the book. They prefer to read the new book by Bernie Sanders. Give it to people who are pro-capitalism to support them with all the facts and arguments so that you can win every single discussion at school or university or wherever you are if you have all these facts in these books.
Amazing. Rainer Zeitelman live from Berlin today on the Michael Savage podcast, How Nations Escape Poverty. I highly recommend this book. Don't give it to a Bernie Sanders squad type. Give it to a capitalist.
Yes.
Dr. Zeitelman, thank you for your time today. It's been wonderful speaking with you. I appreciate it very much.
I appreciate it. Thank you very much. Thank you for your time. Have a great day. Goodbye.
Thank you.
Savage.
Well, thank you very much for listening to today's podcast. I hope you've enjoyed it and learned something from it. We have about 400 other episodes available for you to listen to absolutely free. You can go back into our vast library of podcasts and listen to any one of them at any time. And remember this, if you want to listen to my podcast ad-free, sign up for the Savage Premium Membership and get access to ad-free podcasts as well as some premium content from our Savage Archives. How do you sign up for those ad-free podcasts? Please visit michaelsavage.com for a link. Again, thank you for your listenership. This is Michael Savage.